You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Welcome to another episode of the New Churches Podcast. I'm Tony Morita, founding pastor of Imago Dei Church in Raleigh, North Carolina, and vice president of planter development at Send Network. And my guest today is my good friend, Dr. Doug Logan, director of urban planter development for Send Network. He planted and pastored Epiphany Fellowship Church in Camden, New Jersey. Before that, he served with Eric Mason as the connections pastor of Epiphany Fellowship in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Currently, he is the pastor of church planting at Remnant Church in Richmond, Virginia. He's also the author of a number of books, including On the Block, Developing a Biblical Picture for Missional Engagement. Doug and his wife, Angel, have been married since 1996 and have three sons. Doug, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for welcoming me. I'm so excited to be here, brother. Always good to be with you.
Married in 1996. It dates you a little bit, Doug.
That just makes me vintage, baby, vintage.
Who were you watching play sports in 1996? MJ? Man,
you, of course, MJ, without a question. But I want to remember Penny Hardaway, too, because I have Penny shoes.
Yeah. You're all about those shoes, aren't you, Dougie Fresh?
I like a few shoes.
So today, guys, we want to talk about innovative outreach strategies in urban ministry. This is kind of Doug's wheelhouse, talking about urban life. Doug, why don't you, I think it's always helpful the way you describe center city, suburban, urban. What are we talking about in this podcast?
Particularly when, you know, the word urban has morphed over the years when we think missiologically about it and sociologically. But when I talk about urban, I'm talking about inner city urban. I like to use two categories, center city and inner city. Center city is where is like a Manhattan or a Philadelphia, center city, Philadelphia, over by like a 10th Presbyterian church downtown, dense population. But inner city is often the ethnic minorities of African Americans and Latinos in more violent, rough, drug infested, impoverished streets in sections of towns like Detroit, like Flint, Michigan, like Newark, New Jersey, like the bottoms in LA and places like that, that still hold this concept of inner city, the inner city poor.
That's helpful. And I know where you pastored. You've talked before about bullets flying through the house and doing more funerals than weddings. What was it like, man, pastoring in that context?
Well, man, let me be clear, man. When the ghost sends you somewhere, he gives you this focus that you don't realize sometimes how bad stuff is. When the ghost has got you so focused and called and doing stuff, man, I look back and I realize how rough it was. And I mean, I almost lose my mind a little bit. But in it, man, I was just so excited and overjoyed that God would use me. And that for me in Camden, New Jersey, it was just right for gospel ministry, man. So many people were coming to be saved. I forgot I could get killed any minute. And so the joy of conversions and baptisms, you know, you almost forget that you're in the most dangerous city in America.
Hey, how do we go about understanding specific needs, interests, challenges of the urban community?
Well, I always like to say, man, we can do demographics through city data and different things, but we need to do live data gathering, demographic work, and that's all relationships, listening to stories, getting out on the block and finding out where life happens. I always said, you got to find out where life happens in the hood. So the only way that's going to happen, man, you ain't going to get that with no Google. You got to get that on them feet. You got to hit that block. Talk to some chokers and be out there. You got to walk past some crack. You got to walk past some perks. You got to walk past some guns. But, man, you're going to get the real if you start to build relationships with the people of the city. So what I began to do was simply that and make your own home court. My home court was cookouts and block parties. So, you know, for me, I crank up some music. I bang out some fresh chicken breasts, got my soda and water going. We got the electric slide kicking on the block. Folk coming. And when they get there, we talking that talk. I'm sharing that gospel, loving on them, hearing their stories. And then once that assessment is taken, man, then we compile that data through relationships and we begin to make moves toward taking down the demonic activity in the city. And often whatever's clogging people from meeting Jesus, I want to get that gospel plunger and clear it out.
Yeah, that's a good word, man. And I love the vision. And I don't think I've ever seen you do the electric slide. I really, next time we're together, I'd like to see how you did that evangelistic electric slide move. Segue into the gospel.
Well, we'll call it the Baptist slide for these purposes.
Well, not everybody listening here are Baptist, so it's fine. It's fine. Hey, in this age of technology, how do you leverage digital platforms, social media, other technological tools for outreach in urban ministry? Or did you do very little of it? You know, talk to us a little bit about kind of the way, you know, there's so much emphasis now on technology. But in your context, what was that like?
Yeah, I use both. I did use a lot of live invitations and stuff, but I did social media. Everybody in the hood has a phone. I mean, from 9 years old to 90, somebody is clinging and binging a phone at all times. So just simple Facebook, Instagram, and stuff like that. We later got into a little bit of TikTok for the hood, but primarily, just mainly blasts. And those blasts were invitation to our events. Often, and then when we would do our weekly prayer and fasting, I would post up our prayer list, and then I would call everybody who jumped in. We would pray every hour from 5 to 5. We break the fast at 6. So we would put up prayer points at each hour, and I would tell people to stop and pray together at 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 for 2 minutes. So yeah, we utilize that. And then so from a technology perspective, we utilized it somewhat for community gathering in this spread out, fragmented culture, but also we used it to invite people to different events. Like, you know, a couple of contextual events we used was, man, the hood is loaded with laundromats. A lot of people don't have washer and dryer. Houses are small and they don't have them. So one of our church planners, we planted Epiphany Baltimore, Pastor Charlie and Trevor, they would just get a couple $100 worth of quarters. About, you know, 50 or 60 bottles of detergent and bleach and dryer sheets, and just set up a little cookout in front of a laundromat, get with the owner, and then just give out free quarters for laundry and give out free detergent for them to do it. And then sometimes the people would come, even help fold. Before long, we're dancing, laughing, praying. And they want to know, why would anybody just pay for people's laundry? And we're always say, we're glad you asked. Jesus, who is the Christ, would send us here to love and show you the love of Jesus. That's good. We did that. Book bag drives was a big deal. We did the block beautification. Very few people have lawnmowers and weed whackers. So we bought a bunch of weed whackers and lawnmowers, and we would clean and cut whole blocks. Snow blowers, we had those. We blow the block from snow when it would come. We just wanted to serve and share the gospel. We want to serve and show them Jesus and share Jesus with them as King. And so anything we could, we made it work.
You mentioned the laundromat. Were there other local businesses that you partnered with to do outreach?
Yes. Well, there were some businesses. We worked with ShopRite. They gave us good deals on turkeys during Thanksgiving. I worked with a believer at Chick-fil-A also around Christmas. And we gave out more nuggets than the law allows around Christmas for Christmas dinner. We worked with several food banks within the city. We worked with them. Even Rent-A-Center gave us discounts on furniture for families that didn't have furniture. So almost everybody I ever asked, Tone, when I told them, hey, I'm a pastor in Camden, I need some help, I almost never got told no. Like, all those people were happy to give furniture, to give something. They gave. They were always blown away. And one of our favorite partners is Home Depot. Home Depot came through strong for us on several occasions when we redid a basketball court. And then thereafter, several other times, from discounts to just big love. So, man, the Lord graced me with several partners in business for me. And even beyond that, to work with the mayor of Camden when I was there, I always encouraged that you go meet the mayor. They often like pastors who lower crime in their city with preaching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've heard you talk about Starbucks a little bit before. What did Starbucks do for you?
Starbucks, man. Starbucks been good to me, Tone. It was. Man, Starbucks always had some good donation stuff going. They had a little something, so they always threw something at me. And I frequent a coffee shop where I called you from often, telling you to write some articles about some stuff and Jersey Java. So I just, wherever I was partnering, and wherever I wasn't too proud to beg for tools and ammunition. Mm-hmm. If it could turn into mission ammunition to see people who hate God love them, and I wanted to be their pastor. So if I needed to ask anybody for mm-hmm. something, I had no shame. I only had hope that they was going to say yeah, and a lot of people told me yes.
Starbucks gave you the furniture, right, for your church?
Yeah, when they get ready to clear out, they've given some couches, some stuff. Jersey Java did the same, and they gave me a bunch of coffee, which was good. And I might have stole some extra when they wasn't looking. I don't know. I ain't willing to admit it.
Doug Logan, you can't explain him. You can only experience him, and I hope the listeners are enjoying the experience. Hey, let's kind of talk about apologetics in the urban context. I didn't have this down in my notes as a question, but I remember talking one time to a church planter in Detroit, and he told me, hey, man, I studied all of Tim Keller's Reason for God arguments, and I was equipped with them. The only problem is nobody in Detroit asked me those questions. It was a whole other set of questions that needed to be answered, and it was just a great reminder of how we do apologetics in a context. We do it in response to specific questions in our cities. So, what was your experience like as you were defending the faith in that urban environment?
Absolutely, as a seminary student and all that. Yeah, I mean, I studied at, when I went to Westminster, Immanuel Kant and all of the atheistic ideologies and all types of things through, you know, apologetics. However, in atheism, when you get to the inner cities, you're not going to find a bunch of atheists. They all believe in, many of them believe in some sort of God. They often want to know what Carl Ellis says. Does he bring dignity, honor, and value? And does he look like them and love them for who they are and their uniqueness of their race, history, and personhood? Those are the questions that are being asked. I don't know if I've experienced too many African-American or Latino atheists in the inner city. So yes, apologetics takes a big role. And I was honored to write a chapter in Dr. Eric Mason's book, My Spiritual Father, in urban apologetics, because to date, there was no seminary that was teaching apologetics for Hebrew Israelites, for Nation of Islam, for Black Consciousness Movement, for Kemetic Egyptology. There was almost none. And those demonic ideologies are ravaging the inner city. And so we need to be able to engage that. So, yeah, if you're going to play in the inner city, you're going to have to study some apologetics, and you're going to have to learn the mystery cults on the block, and you're going to have to be able to engage them with the gospel. So pivotal. That's why that's a big deal in my urban ministry degree, is that because it's so missing. And urban church planters are dying on the vine because they get out there and they bring a Eurocentric philosophy of apologetics. And then they run up on a joker on the block with a sachet on with some dudes talking real reckless and violent, and then they can't handle it. So we have to equip them with relevant gospel engagement, and they're going to have to put the work in. You can't come to the hood and talk about planting a church and just making it fun and helping poor people. Poor people need the gospel. Poor people need you to fight like a shepherd, because there's some wolves trying to eat them alive. And it's not just poverty, but it's also theology. Everybody's got a theology, and often it gets imposed, superimposed on poor people who are vulnerable and needful and needy. Therefore, the pastor, the church planter in the city, he's got to step up, and he's got to be in that Bible. He's got to spend less time on the blog, more time on the block, but most importantly, most time in the Bible. Can't be on no fighting with ghosts. You got to fight real devils in the real streets.
Right. Doug, how do you integrate innovative outreach strategies in times of crisis or need with the urban community as you seek to give them practical and spiritual support?
I think the Bible is replete with crisis and God's response. I'm a dreamer, Tone. I'm a tactile kid. I'm a dreamer. I love cartoons. So I've always got a goofy plan that I think would be a blessing. And when I think about, being in Camden, New Jersey, and there was poison ivy and a bunch of brush, I figured, man, this might be an opportunity to redo this whole basketball court. When I think about COVID and talking with Pastor Dave Rosa out in, what's his name? He wanted to get the COVID vaccines in his parking lot with the city. I said, do it, brother. And he did. People were coming through his parking lot and they were getting jabbed up with COVID vaccines, whether people liked it or not, he was. And it was able to gather the community from COVID. And then even when I did my Zoom critical conversations in crisis, there was hundreds of people jumping on. You remember that during COVID. So crisis is where we see throughout the Bible, God steps in. He steps in and he has a work of a presentation of his Messiah. The Messiah came to save in the crisis of sin. And so the church planter has to be ready to jump in, whether it's funerals where I've been able to preach the gospel, show up to spots where crime had just happened and pray. I served with Cure for Camden. And I was a disruptor. A disruptor is just a pastor who, when a crime happens in an area, I go pray with other pastors. We just stand there and pray, and whoever comes up who's been traumatized by that, we're there to pray for them. So there's so much to do in terms of engaging that. And another thing we did was a regular crisis is money. So we always had a budget for hotels for people evicted. We had a budget for electric bills for people whose lights were cut off, especially in a hot summer or in a cold winter. And one of our biggest budgets was food. And so when things fall apart, we weren't saying we wish we could. We front loaded that in. And then when crisis came about, we also had crisis money in our budget. So we were ready to spring to action from whatever the case may be. I remember we had floods. I remember the power went out. We had that small earthquake, and we were always ready to deploy some rugged, rough street disciples to step in and fix whatever problem we needed. And but that was front loaded into our vision and our budget. We didn't run into a crisis tone and then say, uh-oh, maybe I need to figure out how to get some money. No, it was booby. It was set. Why? Because we studied the context and we knew what they needed. So we were always ready to jump in and serve.
That's good, man. That's good. Yeah, I think just leading in crisis in general, one of the things that you mentioned just implicitly is the need to be calm and peaceful and confident as a leader in times of crisis, as people are afraid. It's kind of like being a pilot on an airplane when there's turbulence. Everybody kind of freaks out, but the pilot just calmly comes on and says, seatbelts. And the stewardess is not freaking out. And so you're all right if you're on that plane. And I think being in those places of crisis, as a leader in a church, one of the things we pray for, one of the things we want to exemplify, I think, is a steady confidence in our God, and allow the peace of God to be a characteristic of our leadership, to be a steady leader in chaotic times. So I appreciate you bringing that out, brother.
Amen. And you can't say it no better. I have nothing to add to that, but amen. Yeah, and that's, I was a bootleg father to so many in their crisis. And later I would hear people say, Pastor Diddy, I remember when you told me God's going to make a way 4 years ago when my uncle died, when I lost the baby. You said that. And you were like a dad to me. I didn't even know I was like a dad to some of them. But the confidence in Christ, and the consistency of being there in the inner city was one of the greatest tools that I learned after was a big deal. Many people remember stories of things falling apart. To land a plane on that, one year, the 2012, we broke the record for the most murders in Camden. I think it was 70 was the number. And that murder was on our front steps of the building we met in on a Saturday night for Sunday morning. And it was running through the hearts and minds of the whole congregation. It was running through my heart. I was messed up. I was like, God, you going to let that body hit in front of our church right before, you know, right before launch? I had just lost my father. Probably a month prior, man, church planning was difficult, hard, lost some friends, people on my core team. And, I was in a bad emotional place, but in a steady spiritual place. God was caring for me, but it was hurt. I was hurting. So I get to church that day. I could not focus thinking about that little tape line of that body that was like out there. And there was a demure tone, and we're normally a happier church. So I said, hey guys, I'm having a hard time up here. I want to go preach outside around where that body was. And I went outside and I prayed and I preached in that freezing cold. And we decided that day that come hella high water, we were going to stand flat footed on the gospel. We were going to be right here. We were going to be we were going to inject into the bloodstream of this city a gospel confidence and that Christ is alive and on the throne. And we are going to be right here. You're going to have to shoot me in the face because you won't hit me in the back because I'm not running nowhere. And we prayed and we worshiped. We sang songs out there. And then we got too cold and we went back in. But we were out there for about 25 minutes. And that was a critical moment for our church. And a lot of people talk about that moment as showing forth how God pushed in us a commitment to a city in crisis that had been in crisis for 20 to 35 years. So, yeah, man, God really showed up. I mean, I cried when I got home. I was overwhelmed, but in that moment, I had that energy. So I preached hard for about 43 minutes, and then I went home and cried and crashed. But, man, God settled in my soul that day like a ginger ale settled in my stomach, and I was very happy and thankful to the Lord for giving us that moment.
Man, thanks. Thanks for sharing that story and for sharing the others. Man, this has been super encouraging, Dr. Doug Logan. And thank you, listeners, for listening to our podcast. As always, please leave a review wherever you download your podcast. Remember, friends, the tomb is empty and the throne is occupied. We are good news people in a bad news world. Let's go engage our communities with the gospel out of the overflow of a Christ-adoring heart.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.